If you want to write stories your readers will love, there are three things you need to do. Understand storytelling principles, see how other writers have applied those principles, and then use it in your own work. Here on the Story Nerd Podcast, our goal is to demystify story theory. We'll help you with the first two steps so that you can get started with the third. My name is Valerie Francis. I am a writer and a story editor, and I help women who are writing in all genres learn how stories work so they can finish the books faster and without frustration.
And I'm Melanie Hill, writer, editor, and poet, and I help writers identify and solve their story problems.
On today's episode, Melanie pitched, wait for it, The Substance, so that we can study the shadow. I think Melanie's lost her mind this week. This 2024 film was written and directed by Coralie Farjal. Of course, there will be spoilers because we can't talk about the movie without talking about the movie. But it also means you don't have to watch the movie. And we would love it if you could help other writers find our show by leaving a rating and review. For Apple Podcast listeners, you can do it right from your phone. Just scroll to the show's landing page, go all the way to the bottom, click the 5 stars. It is that simple. Melanie, what possessed you to pick The Shadow? Horror is not your favorite genre, and body horror is definitely not for everybody. So sew us up, Buttercup.
Well, it was all about The Shadow, right? So this season, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do The Shadow, then I'm going to do The Shadow. So here we are.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
Buckle in, everybody.
Buckle in. Oh, my God. So this movie, as Valerie said, isn't for everyone, including me. But here's a quick summary so that you can at least follow along, because it's not necessarily a movie that I recommend that anyone watch it, and I will leave out the horrific parts as I give a bit of a synopsis. So aging TV actress Elizabeth Sparkle is told on her 50th birthday that her aerobic fitness TV show is being cancelled. The network, represented by Harvey, is making way for a younger, more vibrant hostess. On her way home, Elizabeth has a car accident while she's watching a billboard ad of herself being torn down. In the hospital, her spine is examined by a youthful nurse, and when she leaves the hospital, she finds a removable drive for a product called The Substance. This turns out to be a black market product that promises a younger, beautiful, more perfect version of yourself. Elizabeth orders the substance, injects the one-time use serum, and a beautiful young woman called Sue emerges from her back. The makers of the substance provide clear instructions that both bodies are part of the one, and the bodies must switch consciousness every week without exception. So Sue must take a stabilizing fluid from Elizabeth's spine to maintain herself. Sue auditions for the role Elizabeth previously had and becomes a star. But trouble starts, as it must, when Sue becomes confident and successful while Elizabeth becomes self-loathing and reclusive. Sue breaks the rules first and takes additional fluid to remain conscious for an extra night. This causes Elizabeth's hand to age beyond her years, and Elizabeth is warned by the makers of the substance that the consequences of delaying the 7-day cycle are irreversible and the schedule must be maintained. So the women really start to loathe each other and hate each other. Sue harvests extra stabilizing fluid from Elizabeth and refuses to switch back. When she runs out of the fluid, she's told the only way to get more is for Elizabeth to become conscious so that she can make more fluid. Elizabeth regains consciousness as a withered hag. Realizing that what Sue has done, Elizabeth orders the termination fluid, but only completes half of the process, because of the allure of Sue's fame and celebrity status. Both women become conscious. Then Sue beats Elizabeth to death, ending her source of the stabilizing fluid right before she's got due to do or host a New Year's Eve special. And then it gets really gross, and Sue starts to fall apart quite literally. And in a desperate bid to create a newer, more perfect version of herself, she injects the expired one-time use activation serum and creates a physical monstrous multi-version of Sue and Elizabeth called Monstro Eliza Sue, who goes to the studio to start recording the New Year's Eve special. But the audience's reaction isn't great, and Eliza Sue starts to decompose. And eventually she dissolves and is mopped up by a street cleaner. All right, that's pretty much left. Give you an idea of the story without the gory bits. Now, if you have listened to the podcast since the start, you'll know that I am not a fan of horror. I cannot think of anything worse than reading or watching horror. So why did I pick a known body horror film for this week's episode? Well, it was a deliberate choice because I wanted to study a cautionary story with an obvious split person to see how the writer presented the shadow. Now, this wasn't an easy movie for me to watch, and there were times when I had to stop and physically go and throw up. So having said that, I did think it was really fascinating. The grotesqueness of it is important and I think deliberate. And the storytelling is amazing if you can stomach it. Because it's a good example of a story being about one thing. And every aspect of the story serves the one thing. All right. But again, it's not one I'd recommend. But I did try to pick some good parts out of, like, between stopping and running to the toilet. All right. Okay. Let's look at the shadow. And I'm going to go through a little bit more theory to cover off where I'm thinking and where I'm heading with my study of the shadow. So another way to look at the shadow is to think of what a character is ashamed of, right? Shame is an extremely powerful emotion, and it's the emotion that motivates us to keep things hidden. So if we think of our characters as people, then what you see is not all there is to a person. We need to bring the hidden or the shameful aspects of our characters into the light so they can choose when and how to merge their shame into their lives and become a more complete person. So if a character can't recognize, accept, and assimilate their shadow, then the shadow our characters hide will continue to come out as uncontrollable impulses. So think of fears, perceived weaknesses, shame, and disgust. Now, one of the theory books that I've referenced for my study is Christopher Vogler's The Writer's Journey. And in this book, Vogler says, and I quote, "Shadows can express positive as well as negative aspects. The shadow in a person's psyche may be anything that has been suppressed, neglected, or forgotten. The shadow shelters the healthy, natural feelings we believe that we are not supposed to show. But healthy anger or grief, if suppressed in the territory of the shadow, can turn into harmful energy that strikes out and undermines us in unexpected ways." End quote. So sometimes the antagonist is a representation of the protagonist's shadow. It's the antagonist's job to force the protagonist to uncover their shadow and integrate. And I like what Lisa Pates Spindler says on her website, which is, "The hero must vanquish external shadows while internal shadows must be acknowledged." And I think that's a really nice way of describing that interrelationship between the protagonist and the antagonist when it comes to the shadow. What's implied in this statement is that there can be many shadows. This is why understanding who or what are the forces of antagonism is important, because the forces of antagonism need to bring out the shadows. So designing the cast should be centered around the shadow's traits. Now, as I've pointed out last week, the shadow isn't just negative personality traits. The shadow can be what's suppressed, and shadows can also represent untapped potential. Now, in a cautionary tale, the shadow is further suppressed or it takes over, which now leads us back to the substance. A simplistic view of the two characters is that Sue is Elizabeth's shadow. However, I don't think it's that simple. They are more like twins than they are like opposites, I think. So they are individual characters who have a symbiotic relationship. Sue, however, is more dependent upon Elizabeth's body than Elizabeth is on Sue's. So that establishes an interesting power dynamic between the two, which sets up the ending of the movie. So what are each character's shadows? Well, Sue, and her shadow is that she feels like she's entitled to Elizabeth's body, and in particular her spinal fluid. For Elizabeth, she is dependent on Sue's success and youth, so she wants a type of immortality. And then there's also Harvey, right? And he represents, or is representative of, society's obsession with female youth and beauty. He is also grotesque, and he himself is not young, beautiful, or desirable in any way. So these three antagonize each other. However, I don't think Harvey is a shadow per se. He's just a stand-in for society and represents the power brokers. Elizabeth is scared of aging and of becoming irrelevant. She wants to maintain the adoration of the public and believes her best days are in her past. Sue is scared of aging, and she's scared of Elizabeth, and she's scared of missing out. So she is unaware of the consequences of her actions and definitely has the arrogance of youth. So Sue and Elizabeth are each other's shadows, but it's more complicated than that. They will both take extremely dodgy drugs for external validation, and they will both kill for it. But even worse, they will both do anything to stay relevant. They are also the same, but at different stages of life. And this is super fascinating. And I'll cover off on some of that a little bit later. Their shadows take over their lives, and the takeover occurs very early in the movie. When Elizabeth rings the organization that's selling the substance, that's her shadow revealing itself. And note the secrecy and the shame involved with the whole activity. There's the location of the locker, the subterfuge, and anonymous nature of the help desk. It's all screaming, hiding, and shame. But by multiplying herself, Elizabeth's created another shadow, but one that doesn't have the wisdom of age. What we see in this movie is the takeover of the shadow. When Elizabeth attempts to kill Sue, to stop Sue from continuing to suck her youth away, she doesn't go through with it because of the allure of Sue's celebrity status. Now, Elizabeth's physical degradation is caused by Sue's negligence, and it's worse than if she had aged naturally. Now, I'm not sure if I'd call the point where she orders the termination injection as a point when she can redeem herself, but it is a moment when she recognizes that Sue is draining her. So this movie takes us to the fate worse than death scenario, which isn't only monstrous Eliza Sue. It's the forgettability of Elizabeth as her remains are cleaned up by the street cleaner, and she kind of lays as a lump of raspberry jam on her Walk of Fame star. So this makes the point that beauty and fame are ephemeral. Now, I want to mention quickly that if we examine the shadow through an archetype's lens, Sue is a maiden who becomes a vixen, and Elizabeth is a crone who becomes a witch. Now, these are both negative change arcs at different phases of life. Very simply, the vixen is manipulative and doesn't take responsibility for her actions. And this is the first stage of the change life cycle. And it is really easy to see this in Sue when you look at this from an archetype's point of view. The witch is the shadow archetype in the last stage of the feminine life cycle. If Elizabeth had a positive transition into her final stages of life, now let's ignore that she's only 50, right? We'll just move that to the side for a little bit. Then she'd mourn youth and reflect on her life lessons and integrate them into her being and become wise. However, the witch fears death and she becomes bitter and angry at life. And that is what is happening to Elizabeth as we see through this story. All right, so that is a lot to unpack. That is a lot about the shadow with not much light at the end of that tunnel. So, Valerie, I'm going to hand over to you and see how you went with the substance this week.
Well, I have to start by saying that there are so many plot holes in this movie that if you should decide to watch the movie, you have to ignore the plot holes and just move on. Now, you might be so grossed out by it all that you don't even notice the plot holes. That's totally a possibility. But one really quick plot hole that I'll just point out is that when the studio executive, Dennis Quaid, played by Dennis Quaid, when he sends flowers to both Elizabeth and Sue, and he's sending flowers to the same address. Now, they're supposed to be, as far as he knows, they're two totally different people, right? The woman he hired and now the new woman that he has, sorry, the woman that he fired and now the new woman that he has hired. But he or whomever sends flowers on his behalf, like they don't think that this is a problem, that they're sending now Sue flowers to Elizabeth's address. These are the things I think about when I'm watching a movie. This is a plot hole.
You did better than me. I was just too busy trying to keep my stomach contents together.
Yeah, you don't want to eat when you're watching this movie. You don't want to have food around you at all when you're watching this movie. Just take our word for that. Now, Sue does tell a neighbor that Elizabeth has moved out, but the neighbor has nothing to do with the studio, so he wouldn't be the one to tell the studio. And even the neighbor does see Elizabeth come out of the apartment later on. Now, that's when she's, you know, in the witch phase, but still, it's just, there's a lot of plot holes. Anyway, I better not keep talking about those or it's just going to be a whole rant. I will just move along. There's a lot of that when you're watching The Substance. Just move along. Don't dwell too much on that point. I also wouldn't watch it before you go to bed at night because you'd definitely get nightmares from this one. As Melanie said, this is definitely not a film for everybody. Body horror is tough to take. It is stomach turning, but you know, hey, if you're looking to drop a few pounds, then, you know, watching The Substance is much cheaper than taking Ozempic. I just have to say that. It'll do the same thing. It'll turn you off of food. might also send you to therapy. But, hey, you'll drop a few pounds. All right. Oh, I cracked me up. Okay. On to my topic this season, which is the hero's monologue. Oh, okay, Melanie, I was getting really nervous when I was watching this movie. I was nervous for the hero's monologue because there's hardly any words in this movie. Monologue or dialogue, like nobody's talking in this movie. Like seriously, I bet you the script is like 5 pages long or something, if that. So I was really getting nervous that there wasn't going to be a hero's monologue. And this is a long movie. It's 2.5 hours of wonderful gore just to entertain us all. But it relies, like it's a 2.5 hour movie, but it's relying very much on special effects, on visuals and sound effects. It's not relying on on what characters are literally saying. The spoken word is not a big deal here. In fact, if you put it on mute, it might be a little easier to watch. Because you don't have all the sounds, the sort of squelchy sounds that, and sort of like sucking sounds as things are being pulled out of bodies and blah, all that kind of stuff. Okay, so Elizabeth's object of desire is clear from the start. Okay, she wants to regain the beauty of her youth. The hero's monologue is not the same as the object of desire. You have to make the object of desire clear, and the object of desire is, what does the character want? So Elizabeth's want is to be young, but not just young, but young and beautiful, the way she was when she was 20. The hero's monologue is all about the why. Why does the main character want what she wants? Now, in the substance, it's easy to say that Elizabeth wants to look young so that she can keep a job, right? Now, this isn't something that she articulates. It isn't something that nobody really articulates it explicitly. But it's something that we understand from the context of the story. And yes, that is true. She does want to be youthful so that she can still have a job and she can still have a degree of fame. And that is absolutely true. But it's not the real why here. It's not the deeper meaning of anything here. Here is an important point about the hero's monologue. Quite often, the hero actually doesn't understand the true why, certainly not at the beginning of the story. Their true motivation, and this kind of links into what you're talking about, Melanie, with the shadow. Like the shadow is sometimes hidden even from the character, right? Like you said, I think it was last week that you said sometimes in real life you'll hear someone say, oh, that wasn't like me. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I said that. It's a part of them that they didn't know was there. And sometimes that's like the shadow. Well, sometimes, especially if you have a character that arcs, their true motivation is hidden even from them at the beginning of the story. And it sort of takes their experiences over the course of the story for them to understand what their real motivation was all along. Okay. And this is really fun when this happens. So here you have a character with a superficial motivation, okay? Which is, if you wanted to state it explicitly, it would be something like, I want to look younger so I can keep my job, right? But that's not the deeper reason. But this is the beginning of the movie. And yes, Elizabeth does take the substance in order to keep the job. That changes as the movie goes on. The real hero's monologue in the substance comes in the second half of the film. It's at an hour and 44 minutes in. Now, this is Melanie captured this in her summary of the story. It's when Elizabeth decides to terminate this experiment. She injects Sue with a substance that's designed to, bring it all to an end. But before she has injected the entire syringe full of goo, she changes her mind. And instead, she's talking to Sue's lifeless body and begging her to still be alive. Now, this is the kind of scene that we have seen hundreds, if not thousands of times in all kinds of genres of films and TV shows, and even in novels, where one person is thought to be dead and the other person is leaning over them, begging them to still be alive, right? This happened last week in Backdraft, and it actually happens again next week when we do the proposal. Like, it's this scene is everywhere. It's a really common scene type. So when Elizabeth is leaning over Sue, and she's not sure if Sue is dead or terminated or whatever word applies in this situation, because she hasn't finished the termination procedure. So she's begging her to kind of come back to life. And what Elizabeth says then is this: I can't do this. I need you because I hate myself. You gotta get ready. It's our big night. Come on. They're gonna love you so much. You're the only lovable part of me. You have to come back. Now, in the context of The Substance, that's a lot of dialogue. Like, that's a lot of words. That qualifies as a monologue. It's almost a soliloquy. It's so much dialogue for The Substance. Right? So there it is. There's the hero's monologue. The true reason why Elizabeth takes The Substance in the first place is that she hates herself. She believes that the only thing that was lovable about her was the beauty that she had when she was younger. As a woman who's just turned 50, she is still beautiful. I think actually Demi Moore's in her 60s. Still beautiful. Unquestionably a beautiful, beautiful woman. She doesn't see it though. She believes that the only lovable part of her, the only thing that anyone else could possibly see value in, is the younger version of her, which is Sue. And she believes that if she doesn't look 20 forever, that's it. No one will ever love her. So, I mean, that's kind of it, Melanie. Like, there's not much more I can, like, that's all the blood I can squeeze out of this turnip, I have to say. I mean, you know, it's a gross out flick, right? It's not designed to be particularly deep or introspective, although, I mean, I think it deals with some pretty important issues extremely well for the genre that it's in. So, you know, that's not a slight against it. It's just not meant. I can't force it to be something it was never meant to be, I guess is what I'm saying. All right. So, Melanie, all that said, what is the action step for today?
All right. So the action step today is to think about what does your protagonist feel ashamed of? And then how can the forces of antagonism draw this out?
All right, well, that wraps it up for this week. Join us again next week when we discuss The Proposal, because I couldn't handle another scary movie. I needed The Proposal as sort of a palate cleanser from The Substance. To support the show, please leave us a rating and review and tell your writer friends about us. For more information about our online training, visit storynerd.ca/courses. To join my inner circle, go to valeriefrancis.ca/innercircle. And for tips about books to help you read like a writer, go to Melanie's site at melaniehill.au. And remember, story theory doesn't have to be difficult. It's a tool to help you write more, not less. So take it one step at a time and have lots of fun.